This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Dome made an announcement about her political future. We'll talk about that. This Justice Boasberg, is he actually going to get in trouble for what he did? Dave Brat joins us. All that, more Russiagate stuff coming up on Umber. Kamala Harris, I know you were hoping you'd never hear that name again, but that's just not realistic, is it, given the political environment we're in and how power hungry some people are? Kamala Harris made an announcement yesterday that she's not running for governor of California. Now, anybody who knows anything about politics, anyone who knows anything about the naked ambition of Kamala Harris knows that's not what she announced yesterday. She didn't announce that she's not running for governor. She announced she's running for president. Let's talk about this. Because I know what you're saying. She's horrible. No one will vote for her. No one voted for her last time. Maybe you're right. But remember, in politics, we get shocked sometimes. For better and for worse, we get shocked sometimes. Do I need to remind you, back in 2016, Donald Trump was running for president against Hillary Clinton, and there were like two people in America who thought he was going to win that race. And look, I wasn't one of them either. And don't sit there and pretend like you were one of them either. Every poll had him down. Everyone got him. They practically had already sworn Hillary Clinton in. Election night rolls around. Donald Trump is the president of the United States of America. So let's talk about Dome, the why. First, let's understand her background. Obviously, we make a lot of fun of her, justifiably so, on this show because she's horrible. What is her background? How did she get her start? She got her start by sleeping with Willie Brown. Why'd she do that? Was she just so attracted to a man who was several years, I think a couple decades, her senior? No, of course not. She's ambitious. She's a human being who dated Hollywood celebrities. There's video of her with Montel Williams. This is a human being, for whatever reason, I don't know what's inside of her, what makes her tick, who will do anything to get ahead. You know people like this. You've known someone like this in your life. You've either gone to school with them, worked with them. I'm not talking about a normal, ambitious person with goals. You've known someone in your life who will do whatever they have to. They'll kill their own mother in order to get that next promotion at work. That's Kamala Harris. Her entire career has been that. Ladder climbing, knifing people over and over and over and over again. I never thought Kamala Harris was going to run for governor. Why? She was vice president. This is a woman who rose from a local level, courtesy of Willie Brown. She rose from a local level all the way up to be attorney general of California. That's a really, really, really big deal. We don't think about state attorney generals. That's a big deal. It's an important role. Then United States Senator from California, a really big deal. Finally, the vice president of the United States of America. Now, think about the type of person she is and combine that with the fact she was one heartbeat away from what she really wanted, the pinnacle, everything she's ever wanted, no other place to go. That is the top of the mountain. She was VP. And then they pushed Joe Biden out of the race, wheeled him out the back of the White House. Barack Obama's finance team handed her $2 billion. She's running for president. She could taste it, but she lost. She lost embarrassingly. And so what happened was not an announcement that she's not running for governor. What happened was this. Kamala Harris, as big of a moron as she is, she can read poll numbers. She knows her unpopularity, both in California and nationwide. And she also understands donor anger is real. This is something we've discussed before on this show. Democrat donors are angry with her, not because she's an idiot or because she screwed up an interview, because she lost. That's all there is to it. When you hand somebody $2 billion and they lose, and now the Antichrist in Democrat minds, that's Donald Trump, the Antichrist is president because Kamala Harris lost, they're bitter, they're angry with her for it. And so she knows this is her last shot at it. This is a human being, 60 years old, who has strived for this her entire life. Shoot, even David Axelrod laid it out. This is her last shot.
Kamala Harris has run for president twice. in 2020. And in 2024, she came within a point and a half of the presidency. And running for governor of California, as powerful a position as it is, would be a step back. So it wasn't surprising to me. And it's clear that you read her statement that she is setting herself up to run. And Caitlin, she will begin as the polling leader in any race for president, just by dint of having been the nominee the last time. But a lot of Democrats want to turn the page on all of that and look forward. And so it's not going to be easy for her, but it wouldn't have been a slam dunk in a governor's race either. And losing a governor's race would have been the end of her political career.
This is her last shot. It is. And look, I'd be sitting here. I'd be crazy if I sat here and told you that she has no shot. And I'd be crazy if I sat here and told you she can win. From the outside looking in, I mean, you're a logical person. I'm a logical person. We look at politics logically. We look at things like personality. I mean, on the outside, it looks like there's no way this human being could win, right?
Anyone who is 18 today, they were born in 2005. Indeed, yes, wow.
Innovation is about our ability to see what can be, unburdened by what has been.
Well, the press is here. I got some words. I got the vocabulary. And my pronunciation is perfect. I love Venn diagrams. I really do. The three circles, you know, and then they overlap. And so Venn diagrams can help you sort through. I'm just kind of an undercover geek.
I don't know how anybody could vote for that. Neither do you. David Axelrod just laid it out. I've seen polls similar to that. She's going to start out as the leader. Does she stay that way? I doubt it. She couldn't win the last primary, but who knows? We have to keep something in mind because we're about to talk about Newsom and the Rear Admiral here really quickly. Democrat voters are insane. They're deranged communists, and they don't look at the world the way you and I look at the world. So what they're looking for is not at all what you're looking for. They're a completely separate species. Maybe it will be Dome. Maybe it'll be Newsom. And just the thought of that slick-haired lizard person freak being president of the United States of America is about enough to make you throw up in your mouth. I realize that. I'm the exact same way. It'd be awful, right? It'd be terrible. But he's running. He's not going on all these conservative podcasts like the Sean Ryan show. He's not doing that for funsies. He is branding right now. Gavin Newsom is branding. And this is important because him and the Rear Admiral, they're both doing the exact same thing. They're going to try, you're going to watch this now until 2028, so get used to it. They're going to try to walk a tightrope, a very, very careful tightrope. I don't know that it's a tightrope that can be walked, but they're going to try to walk the tightrope. And here is the tightrope they're going to have to walk. You have to, if you're a Democrat today, you have to let the animals in your base know that you want to burn down America, that you are a communist like they are. You hate everything about America the way they do, and you will burn the place down. But you don't win elections with your animal-like base, with your demonic base. You win elections with the normies, the norms and normas who voted for Obama and then voted for Trump and then voted for Biden and then voted for Trump again. Those morons who have no idea what they're talking about, those are the people who win and lose elections. You can't freak them out. You can't come right out and say, I'm going to burn down America. You have to sound like a kind of normal person before Norm and Norma will vote for you. So how do you do that? If you're Gavin Newsom, if you're the Rear Admiral, how do you do that? How do you do that on issues like the tranny stuff? Because Norm and Norma hate it. It's the ultimate political loser. Everyone knows it's weird. It's gross. It's not right. It makes people uncomfortable. It is a political loser. It's a tiny sliver of the population. Nobody wants to be associated with it. But you understand you have a demonic base that demands you tranny everything up. You're going to hear 3 years of answers like this.
What about for your values? I mean, is 8 years old too young?
Yeah, I mean, look, I now that I have a nine-year-old, just became nine. Come on, man. I get it. So those are legit. You know, it's interesting, just the issue of age. As someone that's been so focused on equality broadly, LGBT rights, particularly gay marriage. Mm-hmm. The trans issue for me is also novel. It's over the last few years, I'm trying to understand as much as anyone else, whole pronoun thing, trying to understand all of that. Well, you know, that was like the hell, I mean, all that stuff. I get it. All this stuff started to collapse on us. I joked with Charlie about Latinx, you know.
What did he say there? Well, he tried to let the demons know he's on their side while letting Norm, hey, I'm not sure. I just didn't understand the pronoun stuff. I can't. And he kept doing the hand. He's trying to walk that tightrope. The rear admiral. Look, Democrats have read the same poll numbers you've read and the same poll numbers I've read. They know the tranny stuff's a loser. The rear admiral. He's going to run for president again, already gearing up for it. He's trying to do the same thing.
When President Trump says something like no boys and girls sports, which is a phrase that they use, it sounds like you're not signing on to that.
I think that chess is different from weightlifting, and weightlifting is different from volleyball, and middle school is different from the Olympics. So that's exactly why I think that we shouldn't be grandstanding on this as politicians. We should be empowering communities and organizations and schools to make the right decisions.
What? What's that mean? What's his stance? Well, he wants Norma to let them know he's with them, and he wants the demons to know he's with them. 2028 is going to be wild, and you, me, we're going to be here walking through all of it. All right, let's talk about this Russiagate hoax, because it is getting deeper. The more we get new documents, the deeper it goes, and the more nefarious it looks. We already knew it was bad. Apparently, it looks really, really, really bad. So we have Rogan O'Hanley joining us next to talk about that. Before we talk about that, let's talk about pure talk. Let's talk about putting your money where your morals are. You see, Verizon sucks. AT&T, T-Mobile, these companies take our money and they use it against us. I hate it. I know you hate it. What do we do about that? We only have one thing we can do. There's only one way for us to fight back. You can't take over the boardroom. You have to take your money elsewhere. That's why Pure Talk is here, the patriotic cell phone company that doesn't use your money against you. Make the switch. You'll save a fortune. Make the switch. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. Led by a Vietnam veteran, so patriotic, they've been hiring Americans forever. When you talk to someone, you'll talk to someone who speaks English. puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Yeah, so, you know, we had Hillary Clinton down to whatever we wanted to do with her. And I felt it was inappropriate. She's the wife of a president. Mm. She was a secretary of state. And we could have done a very big number.
Yeah.
And I said, we don't want to be doing that. Let's, you know, put it into the country and not. The concept of putting her in jail, indicting her, all the things that you have to do. You know, it's tough stuff. Mm. And I said, we don't want to do that. In fact, you remember I made speeches when I mentioned her name. They started to lock her up.
Yeah.
And I said, no, this is after we won. Yeah. We just won. And I said,
you wanted the country
we have to
heal.
Get back to, yeah. We want to heal. And yet they did it to me.
Yeah.
So I feel differently. I mean, I'm a human being. Yeah. I have my feelings too. And so I feel differently about it.
Well, I'm sure he does. Trump 2.0 is so different than the first one. I love it. Joining me now, Rogan O'Hanley, lawyer, political activist. You know him as DC Drano online. Rogan, I don't know that I would use the word regret, but it's clear that Trump understands now the nature of what he's facing more than he did before. He sees it quite clearly now. I guess getting shot will do that to you.
Yeah, I'd say so. You know, Trump is kind of following the path he's always followed, which is he doesn't really hit first, right? He'll play fair, but the second you hit him, he's going to go after you overwhelmingly. And I agree. I love Trump 2.0. You know, I think what happened to him during those 4 years where Biden stole it would have probably happened regardless of if he prosecuted Hillary or not. And I'm glad to see him actually take off the gloves and go bare knuckle, because that's where we're at. And, you know, you've put so well on X that, you know, you described the American communism that we're fighting, and it's power at all costs for them. And they want to imprison their enemies. They tried, they did that by and large. Steve Bannon was in prison. Dr. Peter Navarro was in prison. You know, hundreds, if not over 1,000 peaceful protesters got thrown in prison over a destruction of evidence felony that the Supreme Court overturned. I mean, they stretched every limit they could to imprison us. And so, you know, now it's time to actually hit back and make sure this doesn't happen again, because if we don't, it will. And it'll, frankly, it'll get a lot worse.
Rogan, what does hitting back look like? And I mean, are they going to go to prison? Anybody? I'm cynical by this point in time. I'm sure you probably join me in that. We're used to powerful people, especially Democrats, getting off scot-free. But I'll tell you, when the DNI is calling for this kind of stuff, we have powerful people, CIA director calling for this kind of stuff, dropping evidence on Pam Bondi's desk, even old, mean, cynical Jesse gets his hopes up a little bit that someone's going to burn for this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably on the same level as you. You know, I even posted once we heard about the Russia collusion docs being released. I said, cool, but let's see some arrests. And, you know, even if people do get arrested, we still want to see prison time. I mean, look what happened with Diddy up in New York. Just because you get arrested doesn't mean you're, you know, getting convicted of what you should be convicted of. So I am optimistic. I think Trump's approach is a lot more bold in terms of taking down the deep state. I think the American people want justice for what they did to him, for what they've done to this country. So I am cautiously optimistic. I think Tulsi Gabbard has exhibited a lot of courage by doing what she's done. I personally think this is a longer term plan that we're seeing the results of. I think Tulsi Gabbard was, they knew they were going to put her in this DNI position, and they knew she was going to be the front runner for disclosing this information because she's a former Democrat, right? Where it's not coming from Kash Patel, who's a diehard. It's not coming from Dan Bongino. It's coming from someone who ran for president as a Democrat. It gives it a lot more credibility. So I frankly think this is a longer term plan. You know, Trump declassified the Russia collusion docs before he left office in his first term. That's why they raided Mar-a-Lago. They were looking for the Crossfire Hurricane documents. They knew he had them. And guess what? They didn't find them. So he had them hidden somewhere else. So I think we're seeing kind of a longer term plan unfold.
John Solomon, well, here's what he said about Obama.
I know President Trump has every right to be frustrated with him. I think President Trump's analysis last week was right. I think my immunity rule might protect him on the original charges. That's what most legal experts tell me, that ruling is so sweeping it will protect Obama for what he did in office. However, Barack Obama can now be summoned before a grand jury. He cannot take the Fifth Amendment because he has immunity from prosecution. He'll have to tell the truth. If he lies as a private citizen about what he did as president, he'll no longer have that immunity. And that is a trap that Obama is sitting potentially facing.
Rogan, how legit is that?
It's pretty legit. I'm a little curious about him not having the ability to plead the Fifth Amendment. I think there is precedent for this. If you're granted immunity, you can't plead the Fifth. But we generally, I that's such a rare thing. So I'm curious how that works. But, you know, I think what John Solomon is talking about is the process being the punishment. And I tend to agree that the Supreme Court ruling that protected Trump from being accused or, you know, charged with crimes after office would also apply to Obama. But it's an untested precedent, right? There's only been one ruling on this. And so what is treason? Where does treason factor into this? What about seditious conspiracy, right? Like, we know you know, maybe some lower crimes might be covered by that. But what about the more serious crimes? And frankly, what if there is collusion with foreign government here, right? Because, you know, the Five Eyes network, we've got, you know, close allies in these other intel agencies. That do we think they were just not involved in this whatsoever? Of course they were. So if other countries were involved, does that present a case of treason? Does that go above and beyond what the Supreme Court wanted to protect? So I think the general approach should be guns blazing, go after this and make Obama defend himself, right? Republicans have this tendency to be like, well, it could be overruled. Go do it and then let them go fight it in the courts like we've had to do for the last 15, 20 years, right? So let's take steps to make it happen, and then they can pay their lawyers hundreds of thousands of dollars. They can do their appeals instead of us doing it all the time.
Rogan, why would other countries want Hillary Clinton, want Joe Biden so badly over Trump? It's one of those things that I've never fully understood. I understand Trump does things differently, talks differently. I get that, but he's certainly somebody who's pretty magnanimous when it comes to foreign policy. But what is it about him specifically that would lead other countries to get involved in our election?
Well, I think, so it seems like there's two parts. The first part is, why would they want Hillary Clinton and crew? I think we can just look at the Clinton Foundation financial records and determine that. They wanted to make sure that their investments were well spent. You know, they were part of the establishment. They're bought off. It was the pay to play. This has been going on for a long time. Why do they want to stop Trump? I think the most obvious reason is that he is anti-war. I think that's probably the number one thing. He's anti-war and he is not part of the establishment. And the war machine, as you are painfully aware, having, you know, served in the Marines, is a multi-trillion dollar machine. And it's not so much the troops, they're the most honorable among us. It's the defense contract industry that wants war, right? Biden pulled out of Afghanistan. What happened next? Boom, went right into, you know, Ukraine got kicked off and we were financially involved to the tune of billions. So it's a massive profit machine. Trump is anti that. I think NATO is a big reason. NATO and the EU, they want the war machine going. They don't like Trump. Trump's against the wars. So I think that's one of the biggest things, but it also extends to Big Pharma. It extends to USAID. It extends to the interests of the regime. So I think that's part of it. And frankly, I think, you know, Trump's just not a Satanist. He believes in God. He's a good-hearted person. And I think a lot of the people running the system opposed to Trump are dark, evil people.
Can't say you're wrong about that. Rogan, my brother, appreciate you as always. How do you feel? How's your energy level? We get tired too often. And we think nothing of it. We blame it on age. It's 3 p.m. I better get a cup of coffee. That's what we do. I've done it before, too. You're not supposed to be exhausted at 3 p.m. Get some natural herbal supplements in your body and watch your entire life turn around. That's what Chalk will do for you. I haven't taken anything for over 3 years, ever, in my 44 years on this planet. I've been taking a male vitality stack with Chalk for over 3 years. I think I'm closing in on 4 now. I'm never stopping. Bury me with it at this point in time. I just feel so good. My mind feels good. My mood is so much better. They have so many different things depending on what you're looking for. Go to chalk.com/JesseTV and check out what they have. You might just be a completely new person 60, 90 days from now. We'll be back. Is something going to happen to this Justice Boasberg? You remember Boasberg, that bald-headed alien-looking freak who tried to be the president of the United States of America, got slapped down by the Supreme Court. Apparently, DOJ's looking at him now. What can they do? Joining me now, Josh Hammer, host of the Josh Hammer Show, who's going to know a lot more about this stuff than you or I. Josh, DOJ filed a complaint against Justice Boasberg. Certainly doesn't sound like he's going to Leavenworth for 10 years. What does this mean?
Well, Jesse, first of all, I'm not sure if I know so much more about this than you do. I mean, you basically nailed this by calling him just a bald alien looking freak, because that basically is essentially what you have to know about Judge Boasberg, or Judge Bozo, as I was calling him, frankly, kind of to not to be too sophomoric here. But I mean, that's really what he deserved back when we were having this whole Alien Enemies Act litigation. You know, it's hard to keep track of all the immigration related lawsuits. Frankly, even as a lawyer, I have a hard time keeping track of it myself. But Boasberg has been the epicenter of what I refer to constantly as the judicial insurrection, which is this sprawling lower court rise up. It's actually an excellent op-ed in the New York Times today from the conservative Harvard Law School professor Adrian Vermeil, talking about this lower court mutiny. And this has been a real thing. By some counts, there have been more so-called nationwide injunctions that have been rendered against this second Trump administration just in the first 6 months, by some estimates, than the entire first Trump administration combined. So the judicial tyranny is real, it is egregious, and Judge Boasberg is about as egregious an actor as it gets. So what actually happened here, to get back to our topic and kind of talk some nuts and bolts, is that the chief of staff of the Justice Department, a man by the name of Chad Mizell, who was excellent, very good at his job. He's the husband, by the way, of an outstanding federal judge in Florida. Judge Catherine Mizell, who was actually the district court judge a few years ago, who became the first federal judge to rule against the mask mandates on airplanes. That was actually our DOJ chief of staff's wife, to talk about a legal power couple. So the chief of staff, Chad Mizell, writes this ethics complaint to the chief judge of the D.C. Circuit, Sri Srinivasan, essentially saying that what Boasberg has said, both in formal court writings and allegedly out of court as well, to the chief justice, John Roberts, way exceeds the ethical boundaries of what he is allowed to do. Because what he has done, among other things, and just frankly his legal just pigheadedness, among other things, is he has attempted to influence the chief justice of the Supreme Court by threatening completely baselessly, saying, oh, the Trump administration, they're not going to follow court orders. You have to rule against them to kind of put your foot down. And it's basically like, not to dumb it down too much, but dude, it's not your place. That is not your place. Your job is to interpret a statute, to interpret an executive order, and to call balls and strikes. Who the hell are you to tell Chief Justice John Roberts whether or not you think that the Trump administration is going to abide by a court order, which, by the way, they've done every single time. Potentially, I'm not even sure they should be doing that, but they, for better or worse, they have been doing that every single time there. So we'll see what happens here. You're right, Jesse. I mean, don't get your hopes up. This guy's not going to be doing a perp walk. This is not going to be a Fannie Willis mugshot situation anytime soon there. But it is a nice first shot across the bow. Ultimately, I really hope for congressional articles of impeachment against some of these judges and things like that as well.
Josh, the New York Times, I'm almost wincing as I get ready to ask this question, because I don't like to promote the New York Times, which is a disgusting treasonous rag, which should have been shut down a long time ago. But apparently they have an op-ed that's interesting. What is it?
Yeah, it's a great new op-ed from Adrian Vermeule. He is maybe the only one, maybe two right-of-center Harvard Law School professors on the faculty. I've known Professor Vermeule for many years now. We're quite friendly, and he has an excellent op-ed here calling out what he refers to as the lower court mutiny, which is just this series of lower court judges who are not merely just not following the law. You know, this goes above and beyond what Professor Vermeule is correctly alleging him of doing this article. What he is saying is they're actually not even abiding by the rulings of their superiors. They're not even listening to their bosses at the U.S. Supreme Court. And there's any number of examples here. One of the most egregious examples, which is cited by Vermeule in the article, is a federal judge named Judge Brian Murphy, who in an immigration-related ruling issued an injunction. His injunction was overturned by the Supreme Court 8-1, with only Sotomayor dissenting there. And then it gets back to Murphy, and he says, you know what? I still think I had it right. I'm not going to lift my injunction because, guess what? Sotomayor agrees with me. Ha, 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 ha. But it's like, dude, you were literally just ruled against 8-1. I mean, this is outright subversion. That's why I call it a judicial insurrection there. So an excellent new op-ed shining a spotlight on this. Again, I'm not pretending that this new 5-page complaint against Judge Boasberg in Washington, D.C. is going to be a panacea. It's not going to solve all of our problems there. But this is a long, long overdue first step there, a shot across the bow, if you will. And I look forward to seeing what comes next.
Okay, the lower court judicial picks. What is the status? Because I see people complaining about this all the time of why, where are they? Why aren't they getting confirmed? Why aren't they getting confirmed, Josh?
Well, actually, just this week, we did have a wonderful confirmation. Emil Bove, who is a Trump, well, he was a Trump DOJ lawyer. He was also one of Donald Trump's criminal defense lawyers doing the outrageous Merrick Garland, Jack Smith, Democrat lawfare complex prosecution there. So Emil Bove is now confirmed by the U.S. Senate. He will have his formal swearing in, but he is about to be the next federal judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. He's actually filling the New Jersey seat that once upon a time was held by no less a judge than the great Sam Alito himself. So big shoes to fill, to put it mildly there. But that's an outstanding pick there. Emil is basically exactly the kind of judge that we want to see out there in this Trump second term, this MAGA 2.0, a guy who clearly knows what time it is, so to speak, who's gonna rule like he sees it. He is not going to bow to any left-wing pressure there. There's some other good circuit picks out there as well. We have Whitney Hermendorfer down the Sixth Circuit of Tennessee. See some other excellent lower court, district court picks, especially in the state of Missouri, which has had a number of picks. But you're right that it's been a little slower out of the gate. That's not Donald Trump's fault necessarily. These vacancies kind of just arise when they arise. So part of this, what has to happen behind the scenes, this is getting a little in the weeds there. I would like to see a bit of a softer campaign to try to induce more older right of center judges to retire. Because when they retire, Jesse, that will have the natural effect of then opening more vacancies to get some young guns in there. So to just give one example, I clerked on the Fifth Circuit for the excellent Judge James C. Ho, in my opinion, hopefully future Supreme Court Justice James C. Ho. And around the time that I was clerking for Judge Ho on the Fifth Circuit, which is the Louisiana-based Federal Court of Appeals there, there was another judge named Judge Prado who actually resigned back then in 2017, 2018, right around the time that I was clerking for Judge Ho. And that was because the first Trump administration gave him a tantalizing offer to go be the ambassador to Argentina. What a great idea. Why don't we just start offering some more, you know, ambassadorships to like Fiji and fun places like that to some of these senior 70, 80-year-old right of center judges there. So I would like to see more of that. But overall, the judges who have been named thus far are quite good, I think.
Josh, can we pay him? And this is what I mean. Is it legal for some, I don't know, rich right-wing guy to say, hey, how about $5 million? Why don't you go retire?
Look, you know, a private financial transaction between two parties is not the kind of thing that I think would be per se illegal. I mean, I hesitate to give a firm legal opinion because it's always possible there's some sort of law that I'm missing here. It's certainly nothing that I've ever thought of before, Jesse. But, you know, various inducements, I think you're on the right track here, yes.
Well, I'm always game to commit some crimes. Okay, Josh, finally, the Supreme Court, the next docket, apparently there are some doozy big cases. What are they?
All right, so look, we're going to get started here in October for the forthcoming 2025-2026 term. There's already a number of big ones to look forward to, at least two that I am definitely going to be keeping a very close eye on that come immediately to mind. One is it's going to be another major so-called transgender case. There was a massive victory of the Supreme Court, lest we forget, in the Scrimeti case out of Tennessee involving so-called gender-affirming care, aka child mutilation and chemical castration. That was a massive 6-3 victory for the forces of civilizational sanity over the transgender lobby there. Basically said that Tennessee, and therefore all states, can protect these vulnerable kids from the predations of so-called transgender medicine. A very similar case on the docket next term has to do with the sports issue. So can the states actually ban biological males from competing against females? You know, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, obviously they can. I'm pretty optimistic the court will rule the correct way on that one. And then a similar kind of culture war LGBT-ish issue comes out, I believe, of the state of Colorado. This has to do with so-called conversion therapy for minors. Can states ban it? So this gets into the issue of parental rights. You know, who controls the child's upbringing there? The court has been very, very strong, very strong when it comes to affirming parental rights there. We saw that just this past term in multiple cases, including this digital pornography case out of Texas and this book case out of Montgomery County, Maryland there. So I'm cautiously optimistic that that case will also go the right way and that these bans on so-called conversion therapy will be tossed out because it's not up to the states, up to the parents there. But I'm a little more skeptical on that one. It'll come down ultimately, I think, to the briefing and the oral argument.
Josh, thank you, brother, as always.
You bet.
I love fresh olive oil. I never thought I'd say those words before, but I do. The olive oil you eat is old. And we don't realize that it's kind of dull and flavorless because it sits on the shelf in the grocery store for months, sometimes years. Did you know that? I didn't know that. That's news to me. Try one bottle fresh from a farm. You'll know what I'm talking about. Farmfresh246.com. Maybe you're skeptical. You probably are skeptical. I was skeptical. They'll send you a $39 bottle for free. Farmfresh246.com. Let them send you a bottle. You pay like a buck to cover the shipping. You'll be back. Farmfresh246.com. And we'll be back. We got great GDP numbers in. 3%. Apparently, there was supposed to be 2.5. It came in at 3%. Why? I was told everything would be disastrous. Well, I don't know why. I don't know anything about this stuff. That's Dave's job. Joining me now, Senior VP of Business Relations at Liberty University and former Congressman Dave Bratt joins me. Okay, Dave, could you please explain why we had good GDP numbers when I was told everything was going to suck?
Yeah, it's a long story, right? So the first point is probably if Biden was still in office, you would not have these numbers. The big, beautiful bill, right? We're still doing $2 trillion worth of government spending, deficit spending, right? And so if you took that fake stimulus out of the economy, we'd be in the middle of a recession. So on top of that, then you have all the gloom and doomers and the Wall Street Journal and all the establishment elites saying Trump's tariffs and all this global alignment thing is going to nuke us. And so there's a lot of headwinds. And so Trump basically has changed Wall Street's expectations, right? All that, he's got about $10 trillion coming in, right, in capital investment over the years, the next few years. That's not in place yet, but that's going to produce profound economic growth, right? If we can get rid of government spending, if the Federal Reserve would lower the interest rates a little bit, and then ending illegal immigration so everyone's income goes up, right, especially the working class. And so basically Trump, you know, when people think of tariffs, they're thinking of these little efficiency triangles. So that's just the wrong way to look at it. The World Bank, Bank of America, and I think Ernst & Young had another chart, along with Navarro's charts out of the White House, that showed all the G20 countries, right, the rich 20 in the European Union, 80% of world GDP, right? So the rich 20 countries had 200 to 300% higher tariff and non-tariff barriers on us than we had on them. Trump's changed the entire playing field. He said, no more of this. If you explain that to the American people, they go, what? We were doing what? Right. We were getting played. Right. We were getting played in addition to providing, you know, the post-World War II Bretton Woods liberal order, taking care of the sea lanes, peace for the nations, all this stuff we do for the world. We're not getting paid. So Trump said, nope, you want to join our club. You're going to pay a special fee. And now he's got major capital investment, which is the number one driver of economic growth, coming in huge. That'll take a year or so, right up to midterm elections. But basically, Wall Street now sees what he's doing. They get it. And so their expectations are high. So the stock market is up. That's not the real economy yet. But the real economy and GDP growth, we had a good number this quarter. And so that's good news.
Okay, Dave, can you explain to me, like I'm dumb, how did we end up paying so much more than other countries pay? How did we end up in that situation? It's so lopsided that when you lay it out like that, people's eyes bug out and say, wait, what? How did that happen?
I think it's just a combination of laziness. And then you have some forces at the highest level. Tucker Carlson just had a great interview with a Fed expert. Make sure you get him on the show. Basically, our elites, the CIA, State Department, USAID, World Bank, IMF, we've been tanking other countries. We've been playing major geopolitics. Some of those folks want to bring the U.S. down a notch, right? They don't want nation states. They want one world government. And the U.S. Exceptionalism is a detriment to their progress, having this global order. If you want to, you know, the European Union. right? That's kind of the analogy, right? And when you hear about, you know, U.S. digital Federal Reserve digital currencies, right, where they can control your money and stuff like that, Trump is like the last barrier to that happening. So we had folks that really were trying to do us harm. The CIA is front and center, State Department, USAID, and that's, and then just general incompetence. There's no incentive to make sure that the American people do well. The elites like going and being recognized by other elites. And if we always pay the bill, hey, everybody loves you. What Trump's doing right now is, you know, taking some spinach. Everyone may not like you, but they'll respect you, and he will improve the situation for the world's population, in addition to making America great again.
Okay, Dave, so why don't the elites care about America anymore? That's not how they used to be. I mean, you mentioned there's no incentive. Yeah. The incentive used to be your country, and that wasn't even universally a Republican thing. I mean, even guys like JFK would fight and die for this country. What happened?
Yeah, no, that's right. We used to have this group of people called liberals. I like liberals, right? They were fun. We have classical liberals like Madison and Adam Smith, but then you had the JFK liberals and the Democrats, and they wanted to spend too much money and all that. But you could debate with them, and they cared about kids, and they didn't want war and all these kind of nice things. And so, but the problem is the liberals went through some kind of psychological revolution. Now they're Marxists, right? They're neo-Marxists. That divide the world by gender and every alphabet letter soup on earth. And I think it's basically the true answer to your question. I think it's a spiritual formation problem, right? They are really upset that they aren't making it the way they envisioned in the world. They take their bitterness out on the country. There's a hostility toward the U.S. There's a hostility toward white America now, I guess. There's a hostility toward, you know, heterosexual, you know, normal kids in schools. They all need surgeries, and all of that's open-ended. And so it's in the papers today. I saw it was one of the, you know, mainstream kind of things, CNN or Washington Post. 25% of the American population now say they're suffering some form of mental illness. And so there's something serious going on in the water with this self-hatred, and we got to fix that, right? And I it's kind of the loss of the Judeo-Christian West. We don't teach ethics in school anymore. We don't teach what good and evil is. We don't teach if there's a God or not. None of the basics are in place, and if everything is permissible, everything's permissible.
Dave, why didn't we get a rate cut? If things are going so gangbusters and Wall Street's finally calmed down, we got this money coming in and things are going... Why not a rate cut?
Well, they're still under this. Well, the answer is it's probably political, right? That's the answer, right? They gave Biden a rate cut right before the election. Why is that, right? So now they think, you know, the trade situation still might pop prices a little bit or something, in spite of the evidence from the first term and the third term so far. There's no evidence for that. The real solution here is Trump, if he's listening or any guys at the White House are listening, they ought to put some pressure for some spending cuts, right? If you got rid of that $2 trillion deficit spending, we'd be in a recession. So no one wants to cut the spending on their watch, right? But that's $2 trillion that's crowding out the private sector. And everyone says we're supply siders now. Thank God. Right. But if Trump would make a deal, hey, we're going to cut spending. But hey, Fed, Powell, when we cut spending, you're going to stimulate and print some money. So there's your compromise that really can work. Right. Cut the spending. Speaker Johnson, Senate, Thune, cut the spending, make a deal with Powell that in exchange for slowing down the economy without as much government spending, we're going to do some Fed rate cuts. The markets will love it because you're getting rid of government funding. You're shoving it back into business. And you're getting lower interest rates. So it's a win-win, except for the people who hate America.
Dave, you are the best, brother. Come back soon. Appreciate you. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And, you know, sometimes you forget what a gigantic dork Cory Booker is, because he's weird. He just disappears for long periods of time. And then it seems like every few years he'll pop up and remind everybody, hey, I'm Cory Booker and I'm a gigantic dork. And we just had another sighting.
It's time for Democrats to have a backbone. It's time for us to fight. It's time for us to draw lines. And when it comes to the safety of my state being denied these grants, that's why I'm standing here. Don't question my integrity. Don't question my motives. I'm standing for Jersey. I am standing for my police officers. I'm standing for the Constitution, and I'm standing for what's right. And dear God, if you want to come at me that way, you're going to have to take it up with me, because there's too much on the line right now in America. As people's due process rights and freedom of the speech rights and secret police are running around this country, picking people up off the streets who have a legal right to be here. There's too much going on in this country. When are we going to stand together for principles that I just heard that we're agreed with? When are we going to stand together? If we don't stand as Democrats, we deserve to lose. But if we stand united, if we stand strong, if we stand with other people, if we tell with a chorus of conviction in America what this president is doing is wrong, if we stand up and speak that way, dear God, we will win. Like all of those people at our ancestors who joined hands together and said, we shall overcome. No, not on my watch. I'm protecting Jersey today. I'm protecting our Constitution today.
It's so forced. It's just the least genuine thing ever. All right. Let's see.